This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I am so excited for today because today is a conversation that I would like to have myself. This is almost a selfish conversation in today's market.
Yes.
This is a fantastic chat that we had with Kyle Green. He is the owner of the Green Mortgage Team. Kyle is a friend of the show. He's been on the program a lot.
Past guest, fan favorite.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing about Kyle, anyone that knows him is he is a super well-established mortgage broker, has a massive team and portfolio book in the Lower Mainland. And who better to talk to about investments in real estate, strategy around investments than Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about Kyle is self-described works primarily with investors.
Right.
And he invests in a lot of real estate himself. So if you want somebody with a finger on the pulse of what's going on right now.
And some skin in the game.
Kyle Green is your man and he's on today. And also what I like about Kyle is he's a great guy to just bounce ideas off of because I feel like he just has these conversations all day. So, similar to us, I guess, but in some respects, we just ask them, are there opportunities right now? What does the next 6 months look like? Defense or offense? We go into it all.
And what I love about this as well is it goes without saying, but he's talking to high-level investors all the time. And so it's like, where are the investors going, right? What are they doing right now? What strategies are people taking? He is an open book today on the podcast, talks about everything real estate, what's going on in the current market. This is a great episode. And if you are kind of just monitoring the market, wondering, should I be out there shopping right now? Should I be getting my ducks in a row? Should I be buying in the Lower Mainland? Where should I be looking? Today is the episode for you.
You know, one thing I've been thinking about, and we kind of touch on it a little bit today, is the kind of shock and awe strategy that the Bank of Canada is employing right now, and I guess the Fed as well, but raising interest rates so dramatically, I'm wondering when the moment is, right? Because I think, and Kyle kind of alludes to it today, and this is, I think I'm in agreement with him. You know, the next 6 months, I don't think anybody has to worry about prices running out of control in terms of escalation, right? But when does the shock and awe wear off and it kind of goes back to business as usual? Because we're clearly kind of in a shock and awe moment, which makes me wonder, okay, where the window of opportunity, how long does this last?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I was actually with another agent on the weekend talking and his prediction, take it or leave it, but he's been selling a lot of real estate for a long time, was that September we're going to see an uptick of people coming back to the market. So TBD.
TBD, that's for sure. I feel like there's a lot of people with pretty clear crystal balls out there. I'm following them all. And I feel
yours
like—
yours is a bit murky, though.
I'm admittedly murky because I feel like I've watched everybody get this wrong a bunch. There's no clear-cut answers here. But one thing's for sure, we are in the doldrums of summer.
Right.
And I'm not complaining.
And like in the second heat dome in 3 weeks or whatever, right? Man, I was in a place with no shade on the weekend twice. I think I had sunstroke like 2 days in a row.
Well, you actually had your daughter's birthday.
I had my daughter's birthday at McLean Park. And man, I was there. It was supposed to be like a 3-hour party, but people just kind of kept coming and
producer
going.
Producer Brady D was there.
Yeah, Brady D was there. I stood to make sure, this is what a gracious host I am. I stood outside of the shade to give everybody else the shade. Not all heroes wear tank tops. Some tarps off myself, but I stood there.
Come on, you weren't.
I was tarps off. Yeah, I was tarps off the entire time.
You gotta be kidding.
Yeah, I was the only one. But here it is. I stood in the sun while everybody else stood around in the shade. But man, I was like sick for like a day after. So much sun, so hot right now. And then last night, like, so So then the following day, Sunday, I go to this rooftop deck party.
No big deal.
MBD. And it's over at a friend of the family's. And I go, okay, well, clearly there's going to be some shade because I'm still sick from the birthday party.
Right.
Get on the rooftop deck. Nothing. No shade whatsoever. Not a tree. Not an umbrella. Nothing. Stood out there for another 3 hours and just cooked. And I'm finally starting to feel normal again. But like it was like sun hurt when it hit my skin.
This almost feels like world's smallest violence stories here.
Yeah. So anyways, and then I went home. It was lumpy pillow.
Yeah.
I had a horrible sleep.
The takeout was cold.
The takeout was cold, yeah. I actually, the one thing I will say is, you know, we complain in Vancouver when it's not hot. And then we definitely complain when the weather's like this. Like that's what everyone's like, it's too hot. It's like, it's horrible. No air, no AC, et cetera. But it's like, and this is what we've been waiting for.
Yeah, I'm not complaining yet. That's for sure. Maybe we should cut Adam to our talk with Kyle Green.
I love this one.
Yeah, no, it's great hearing Kyle's take on the current moment.
Yeah, no, this is a fantastic episode. And if you are one of those people who's kind of hanging around and wondering, I want to get in, I just got to figure out how to get in and how to time this and what strategy to use when it comes to interest rates, etc. This is for sure the episode for you.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland. We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
All right, so we're here with Kyle Green. He is the owner of the Green Mortgage Team. How you doing, Kyle?
Great.
Yeah, Kyle, thanks so much for taking the time. Past guest fan favorite, that's for sure. Maybe for people listening that haven't heard you on the show before and aren't familiar with you, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
For sure, yeah. I've been a mortgage broker for just over 15 years now. So I started when I was 19 years old, locked out, got into a really good situation where I was assisting some really high producing agents, and then broke off on my own in 2009, started building my own business, my own brand, and hiring my first staff member, et cetera. And my niche has been working with real estate investors. So in 2008, I got hooked up with a fellow named Ozzy Giroc here in Vancouver, started doing presentations for him and his group. I did my very first live presentation in front of 600 people when I was 21 years old, and it was actually accident. I was supposed to speak that day, but another mortgage broker didn't show up, and so I had an opportunity to get in front of 600 people and talk with no material at all. And now I'm one of the leading brokers with regards to real estate investment, especially in Western Canada. So I'm a member of RAIN, another group called REAG, a member of Keyspire. So our client base is about 80% real estate investors. In addition to that, I recently bought a mortgage brokerage in Vancouver that funded $1 billion. And with myself, my team, and some of my agents that came over, we're now about 50 agents funding about $1.4 billion in mortgages annually, which is good for about number four or five for Dominion Lending franchises in the country. And in addition to all this, a couple of years ago, I also started a real estate investing consulting company to help real estate investors grow their real estate portfolios as well. So Yeah, lots to do and whatnot, but most of it is all in the finance space and in specific financing for real estate investors.
That's fantastic. Well, Kyle, every time we have you on the program, I think we start with this question, but just generally speaking, how's the market?
You know, it's very interesting. We haven't seen interest rates rise this quickly since, I believe, the 80s. There was another period, I think, in the early 90s or mid-90s when interest rates went up fairly quickly, too. But I think this is a period where we've seen the fastest increases since the 80s. And so, obviously, a lot of what we've been dealing with is just explaining what's happening and why it's happening to customers. What we've noticed as far as the real estate market, especially in Vancouver, is concerned, is that it's still a fairly resilient market. We're still dealing with a low supply market. However, the demand side has also fallen too. So it doesn't seem like, and in many cases, when we see a market turn like this, you often will see the supply increasing, and that will often cause prices to fall and fall fairly quickly. But we're not really seeing that in Vancouver. I think you're seeing it more in Ontario and some other provinces in Canada. But we're still in a low supply market. So yes, interest rates rising has caused the demand side to fall, but we're not really seeing prices fall as quickly as some would have expected them to, because the supply is not increasing.
So as someone who works with investors a lot, what are investors doing right in this moment?
Yeah, it's an interesting observation, because a lot of people are talking to us and saying, well, you know, how is it affecting your business, Kyle? It must be slow. And yes, leads coming in and new inquiries coming in since, I would say, March have decreased from the peak. Like January and February was absolutely crazy. And we've had less inquiries since then. And so we've been kind of expecting things to start to slow down. But even up to the end of July, we've been outpacing our fundings from last year. So we're about 10 or 15% higher year to date than we were last year. Now, August is our first month. We're finally seeing that dip month where we're closing less than what we'd be on track for, what we were pacing for compared to last year. But it's the first month we've had all year where we're actually decreasing. And I think that part of that is because investors provide us with a bit of a counter lever compared to a generalist in the marketplace. When things start to slow down, we get a lot of our investors starting to come back into the market and start to sniff around again, because now is a great time in a low demand market. There are going to be sellers that have to sell. And if there's less people ready to buy that product, then investors are starting to sniff around and say, you know what, I will buy this property, but only at a big discount. And so a lot of our investors are coming back. A lot of them actually took a step back during this crazy market and said, I'm not going to bid with 20 other people over and over and over again. I don't have the time. I'm not interested in overpaying for a property. But now that has run its course, we're starting to see a lot of investors starting to come back into the market. Even though interest rates are higher, you can get a better deal on a property, you can negotiate better terms. We're starting to see a lot of them are coming back and at least getting prepared to write offers.
So it seems to me, at least with a lot of people that we're talking to, there seems to be two kind of takes. One is that you should wait, you know, 6 months for what potentially could be kind of finding the bottom in the market. Or alternatively, some people are out shopping right now to try and get sellers to overcorrect, basically on where they're willing to go right now, just because the market has softened and it is fairly quiet out there.
So much uncertainty.
Yeah. And there is so much uncertainty. Are you hearing that in your circles? And what's your take on that?
Yeah. I kind of agree with both stories there, actually, because I do think that overall the market is probably going to slowly decrease a little bit. It definitely has a floor underneath it in Vancouver in particular. And I think that we're at or very close to that floor. I don't think that it's going to get way softer between now and 6 months from now. However, I don't think that that's absolutely wrong or completely out of line to say that. However, if you're an investor, there are going to be opportunities that pop up now, in a month from now, 5 months from now, 6 months from now. I don't think that waiting and timing the market will necessarily outperform you just being ready to jump when an opportunity arises. A good example of this is I find that in mid to late August in particular, it is probably one of the slowest times in real estate. You guys probably experienced this too. The least amount of calls are coming in. You have shown up, you know, have an open house and nobody's showing up because they are taking their kids for that vacation before the summer ends, et cetera. Well, what if there's a really motivated seller that has to sell, they've got to sell quick, they've got to move before school starts and whatnot, they need to close in 3 or 4 weeks. If you're an investor and you have the pocketbook open and you're looking at that moment, or you might be able to find a really good deal, or maybe you can negotiate $100,000 off the price and on a $1 million property, let's say, well, that 10% decrease, in my opinion, is probably more than what you're going to see in the next 6 months in general in the market. So I think that as an investor, it's just good to be always prepared and ready and have your eyes open and be willing to throw out some offers, even if they're lowballing it, because you just never know when somebody's willing to accept it and the motivation on the other end.
Kyle, we know you buy a lot of real estate as an investor yourself, and you're tapped into the Canadian market in general, should say actually the North American market. Where are you seeing investors go right now? A lot of investors, don't stop investing in real estate, but it's more so pivoting or moving to a defensive or going to another market potentially. Where are people going?
Yeah, good question. A couple of areas that I'm noticing right now as a kind of an overall philosophy, I think that a lot of investment is moving into the short-term rental business right now. I think that investors are trying to find yield in this climate where interest rates have gone up and prices have gone up. And the only way to cash flow a lot of product now is to look at the short-term rental market. And so I expect that trend will likely continue for at least the next 6 to 12 months. I'm unsure of where that market will head after a 12-month period, because in general, if we do go into a recessionary period sometime in 2023, which seems becoming more and more of a likely outcome with the inflation concerns and how the Bank of Canada is reacting to that with interest rate rises, in general, you're going to find that those types of assets that people don't need but want, are often assets that will also fall in value. So after the subprime crisis, for instance, we saw a lot of recreational real estate decrease because people aren't going to go to their cabin and aren't going to justify that payment that they have, or won't be going on as many vacations if they're worried about keeping their job. So I'm not sure where that market will head, medium term, but I think short term it's still very strong and will continue to be strong. In general, I really like downtown core condos. That market has been relatively flat and reasonably soft because of COVID. And I think that you're going to find with immigration opening back up, with employers wanting their employees to come back to work, with entertainment coming back, I think they're going to see a lot more people moving back into the urban centers. And so I think we actually might see the counter to what we saw during COVID, which is a lot of people moving east into Chilliwack and Abbotsford, et cetera. I think you're going to see more people kind of get sucked back into the downtown core again. And so I like the downtown core. It's harder to cash flow properties right now at current interest rates, but I think that in the future with inflationary pressures in everything, including rents, I think that within a few years it's reasonable that you could get your cash flow up to where it would need to be to make that work. In general, I'm seeing a lot of people buy in Vancouver Island, many different pockets of Vancouver Island, but in general, Vancouver Island and some other areas like Kamloops and Prince George. Those interior blue collar towns also seem to be having a little bit of a surge where there's good cash flow, as well as Edmonton and to a lesser extent, Calgary seem to be other areas that our clients are focusing on, especially as cash flow in BC is getting harder to achieve. In general, it's a bit easier to achieve that in markets like Edmonton and Calgary.
Framing it maybe a different way, are there markets right now that you would avoid or markets that you think are potentially going to get beat up worse than others?
Probably detached in the east suburbs, I think will be a bit softer, in my opinion. I think a lot of people moved out there during COVID, and there is a larger than expected demand for detached homes in Surrey, Langley, Abbotsford, Chilliwack, et cetera. And I think that might start to reverse a little bit, as all of a sudden, if those people find that they're driving back to Vancouver more frequently than they realized they would be when they bought out there, you might find that all of a sudden their employer says you have to come back to work, even if it's just for a couple of days per week. All of a sudden that 1.5 hour commute each way a couple of days a week is going to become quite arduous. And so I think you might see some shifts there. And just in general, with the fact that pricing ran up so much in those areas, in general, the higher and faster prices rise in a certain market, when things do correct, they tend to generally correct in the opposite direction, right? So I do think that we'll see that those types of markets correct a little bit. We're seeing the same thing, and this is outside of BC, but if you go to Ontario, a lot of the suburbs of Ontario are having that issue. you're finding that a lot of those markets are definitely decreasing, and they're feeling it a bit more than I think we're going to feel it out here. But I still think that those are markets that I would probably be avoiding right now and waiting for that 6 month mark to see where the dust settles.
You know, Kyle, early on, you said you're spending a lot of time explaining to clients what's happening and why it's happening. And I'm kind of curious if you can kind of explain to our listeners what's happening, why it's happening, and maybe as a third question, how long it lasts.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously interest rates are rising, and they're rising, you know, quite aggressively. So really quickly on interest rates and how they work, the Bank of Canada controls what's called the overnight lending rate, which is what determines the prime rate. And so they set the overnight lending rate. That for the longest time during COVID was at 0.25%, and they've been increasing that rate quite aggressively over the last couple of months. The most recent change just a couple of weeks ago was them bumping it up by a full 1%, which is obviously affecting anybody that's in any variable interest rate, whether it's a line of credit or mortgage or anything like that. So the Bank of Canada has an influence on anybody that's in a variable rate right now. And for fixed rates, it's actually a completely different market. So a lot of people expect, well, the Bank of Canada moving the interest rates means that fixed rates are rising. They have an effect on it, but it's not a one-to-one impact on it. And so fixed rates are actually correlated with bond yields. And so if you wanted to know where fixed rates are heading, you can actually follow the bond yield, so the five-year bond yield in Canada. If bond yields are going up, then fixed rates are going up. If they're going down, then they're going fixed rates will go down in general. The only other factor that you're going to see is generally that the overall money supply and availability of credit determines and affects the spread or pricing above those bond yields. And so as of right now, fixed rates have risen quite substantially over the last 6 months in particular since January, because bond yields have gone up, but also because the spread over top of bonds has also increased. And part of the reason for that is that the central governments are reversing what they were doing before. So instead of buying bonds and pushing money into the system to get money out, that's one of the main ways that they actually get money into the system, is just by buying bonds and other financial instruments like that. They're doing the opposite now. They're selling off those bonds. And so now there are fewer buyers and more sellers for bonds, which means the yields are going up and fixed rates are going up. So what's happened over the last 6 months is bond rates have shot through through the roof, and as well as the spread over top of those. We saw fixed rates go, like we had clients that had rates under 3% back in February, March. And in fact, some of those rate holds just expired like a month ago. We had some clients who were funding and closing mortgages in early July that were at 2.99%. A current going rate for a five-year fixed rate with most major banks is around 5.29% right now, which is crazy. So we're just over a short period of time, rates accelerated quite quickly. What we're seeing over the last few months is that the prime rate has also been increasing quite quickly because the Bank of Canada has been aggressively increasing the rates. Now, the whole reason for all of these interest rates rising is inflation. That's the core reason for this. And so the government has obviously had an impact on bonds because now they're selling a ton of bonds. They're one of the largest bondholders in the world, or central banks. And so if they're all selling their bonds, they're proactively trying to increase rates in the system in order to slow down how many people are borrowing money to continue to expand, because they're concerned about the inflation. Inflation is a very risky thing. It is something that central banks are very concerned with. And so because of the inflation numbers in the US and in Canada in particular, increasing the interest rates is going to slow down the inflation rate. And the interesting thing is, it seemed like in the beginning of the year that there was two different directions the Bank of Canada might take with this, which is either increase the rate slowly, which means that they're going to combat inflation at a slower rate, but also have a lower likelihood that they're going to put themselves into a recessionary period in the next 12 to 18 months. Or the opposite was going to be that they're going to raise the rates very quickly and aggressively in order to stem and combat inflation, but increase the likelihood of a recession in the next 12 to 18 months. And it seems like that is the stance that they've taken. And that's why you're seeing massive increases, like a full 1% increase to a prime rate, which is almost unheard of. Usually they move in quarter point increments. They're just trying to shock the system by going up aggressively. So as of right now, the prime rate in Canada is 4.7%. The general consensus with economists is that the government's likely to go up into what's called the neutral rate zone, and that would be a prime rate of between 4.7 to 5.7%. So we're very close to that range. We're at the bottom end of that neutral rate zone. If you look at what the major banks are predicting, is that the Bank of Canada is likely to go up another 0.5 to 0.75% during this year, and then probably no more increases next year. So anybody that's in a variable rate, you can probably expect another 0.5 to 0.75% of an increase this year, and they probably will not increase it any further into next year. Interestingly, on the bond yield side, if you look at what's happening with bond yields now and also the predictions on bond yields from the major banks, it's about 50-50. A lot of the major banks think that bond yields are going to be about the same as they are today or actually lower than they are today by the end of the year. And every single bank thinks that those bond yields will be lower again by the end of next year. And that's because the bond markets price in recessions. And so it seems like there's a higher likelihood of a recessionary period next year, which means that anybody taking a fixed rate today is probably taking a fixed rate at or very close to the peak of short-term fixed rates anyways. And if you're taking a variable rate, then you should be pricing in another 0.5 to 0.75% of an increase sometime this year.
What would be the strategy? Like if I was to talk to you today, Kyle, and say, look, I want to buy something right now, either as my principal residence or a revenue property, and I kind of want to ride out this this bumpy period and then hopefully refinance when we're at a lower rate environment. What would your strategy be for someone like that?
Yeah, probably one of two things. Most of our clients are going variable right now because the nice thing about variable is that you can lock it into a fixed rate at any point in time during your contract, which means that even if you wanted a fixed rate today, but you're willing to take a bit of a bet and a gamble on it, then we might suggest, well, go variable for now. And if what the banks are all predicting is going to happen does happen, then we should see fixed rates compress and decrease over the next 12 to 18 months. And then you could just lock it into a fixed rate at a lower rate than what's available to you today. And on top of that, the variable rate as of today is still lower. And so you'll probably see that as the prime rate moves up, you're going to inch closer and closer to where a current fixed rate is today, but you'll start off at a lower rate and then inch up closer to that. But because there's some downward pressure on the fixed rates in particular, I think that we'll eventually start to see that that fixed rates will start to come down and you may be able to lock into a lower rate. The other option, which we're starting to see a little bit more common with our clients as well right now, is either a 1 year or a 2 year fixed rate. So you just take a 1 or 2 year fixed rate at a lower interest rate than a 5 year fixed rate. And then when that mortgage comes up for renewal, then you shop it around and see whether you'd like to go into a variable or go into hopefully what ends up being a lower fixed rate and when that renewal comes up.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
For at least the last, well, close to a year, I would say, at least as I understand, the gap between a five-year fixed and variable was quite dramatic. If I understand it, there's still that gap that exists, but what you're expecting is potentially over the next year, that gap becomes increasingly small.
Correct. Yeah. And so we're expecting the gap will start to shrink. It depends on what type of mortgage you're in right now. So if you're getting an insured mortgage, so putting less than 20% down, or if your mortgage is what's called insurable, and the qualifications are quite complex, but basically it's the property was initially insured when you bought it, you know, 5 years ago or 4 years ago, or if you haven't refinanced your property since you bought it a number of years ago and the loan is under $1 million and a couple of other stipulations. An insured or an insurable mortgage are easier for banks to bundle up and sell at the back door. And the rates are actually a lot better for those right now. There seems to be a bigger spread or gap. But if you're doing that, a variable rate right now can be as good as prime minus 0.9 for an insured or an insurable mortgage. Whereas if you're getting into an uninsurable mortgage, so if you're trying to refinance or you have to go to a major bank for another reason, you'll find that the major banks right now are between prime minus 0.2 and 0.4. So I feel like if you're taking an insured or insurable mortgage with one of the non-bank lenders that mortgage brokers have access to, that prime minus 0.9 rate is pretty good. You currently be at 3.8%. And so even if the rate increases another half or 0.75%, you're looking at a rate of 4.3 to 4.55%, which is still much lower than a current five-year fixed rate. If you're getting into a mortgage rate with some banks that are around prime minus 0.2%, for instance, right now, you'd be starting up at 4.5 and probably increasing another half to 0.75%, which is bringing you much closer to a current five-year fixed rate. So it also depends a little bit on what type of mortgage you're able to qualify for. But in general, a lot of our clients that can qualify for an insured or insurable mortgage, most of them are going variable because that spread and discount off of prime is quite deep. And even if the Bank of Canada increases a full 1% this year, we still think that your pricing is going to be below what a current five-year fixed rate is today.
Kyle, just for our listeners out there that maybe don't understand financing incredibly well, can you give us a sense of what this has done for borrowing power for people?
Yeah, it's had a major impact. So on top of all of this happening in the rates increasing, for the longest time, we were able to qualify clients at the same rate. So there's been a stress test that came out in 2016. And effectively, a stress test is either your rate plus 2% or 5.25%, whichever is higher. And so it's been a situation where because interest rates have been so low for so long, we are qualifying pretty much all of our clients at 5.25%. Now, recently, because interest rates have risen, if you took a five-year fixed rate at 5.29%, you'd actually have to qualify at a rate of 7.29%. And you compare that versus being able to qualify as if your rate was 5.25%, well, that's a major increase. And in fact, it's decreasing borrowing power by about 20%. And so not only has pricing gone up and the homes are 20% more or even more than that over the last couple of years, but you also qualify for 20% less. And so we're in a really interesting market here where we actually have a number of clients who were needing to buy properties very quickly because as soon as the variable rate increased by 1%, we lost about 10% of their borrowing power. We're still qualifying them for, you know, about 5.25%. And all of a sudden, now that the interest rates have risen, they qualify for significantly less. And so for some of our borrowers who are right on the edge, there's an incentive for them to buy something very, very quickly before interest rates rose and they were unable to afford it anymore. So it's been an interesting time, not only just on the interest cost itself, but also affordability. We haven't been in a situation where the interest rates rising this quickly is affecting affordability as much as it has recently.
So somebody out there, having just heard you kind of run through that, is saying, well, why don't you think then that the market's going to get hammered in the next 6 months, maybe, right? Where does your confidence come from in the market kind of staying in more of a balanced state then?
Yeah, and it kind of depends on where you're looking, and you guys know this, but every market is independent in a sense, right? You know, how many buyers and sellers are there in any market, and inside of any market, you also have townhomes, condos, detached, etc. I think that the key here is with all of this happening, yes, we've seen a decrease in demand, but we have also seen that the supply has not increased. And we still, if you look at the number of properties that are being sold and the percentage of listings that are selling on a month-to-month basis, in many markets, it's still considered a reasonably balanced market.
Right.
And in a balanced market, you don't typically see that prices continue to decrease. Now, maybe we continue to see, okay, if buyers' borrowing power decreases further, then we may see the demand eventually slip below the supply threshold. But it's important to understand that for 18 months or so, the demand side was like 4 to 5 times higher than the supply side. And it was absolutely nuts. And so even if the demand side has decreased substantially, it is still slightly above or at the line of the supply line, which means that in that type of market, you're still in a balanced market where in general prices are stable. Now, normally when the market starts to turn a little bit, you're going to find that prices are going to decrease on paper because you're seeing back in, let's say, February, if there's 20 bidders bidding for a home, then people are generally paying a bit, you know, over market for that particular product. And so then if you project into May or June, you say, okay, yeah, prices are down by 15%. Well, maybe the prices were artificially high in February because of a crazy spread between demand and supply. And so it's hard to say that, you know, you shouldn't be taking that peak number in February and saying, well, that, you know, from that number, prices have decreased by 15%. Because I think that's just a general kind of correction in the market that you would expect. And any time you see a market change, that's typically what happens. But now that we've kind of corrected a little bit, we're still seeing that supply and demand is about equal. And one thing in particular, and this is one of the reasons I really like condos, is, you know, we saw that some of the developers were selling condos for a period of time, but it takes a really long time to get condos onto the market. So COVID hit, a lot of projects got paused, delayed, canceled, and then all of a sudden, okay, yeah, actually there's a really strong market right now. Let's build and let's sell some condos. So you had probably about a 12-month period or maybe up to 18-month period where developers were able to get projects off the ground and were able to pre-sell their buildings. But now I'm having more developers contact us and say, yeah, we need to figure out how we can sell some of our units and promote some of our units again. Well, there is going to be another pause again on development and construction. And in general, condo building will take 3 to 4 years to build, where detached can be, you know, 6 to 9 months to build. And so I think that there's going to be a higher demand for condos in particular, and the supply is not something that can just be turned on. It's not a switch that can be flipped. And so I think that for the next couple of years moving forward, I think you're going to see a higher demand than supply available for condos in particular. And we saw this back in 2016 to 2018 as well, where the spread between condos and detached started to decrease as people eventually, you know, reconciled and said, okay, we really wanted a house, we can't afford it, let's just buy a condo. So I'm still very bullish on condos in particular. And if you're looking for probably the safe bet, then I would say buying a condo, maybe you don't see large increases to the value, but I also think that you're unlikely to see decreases to the value of condos for the next couple of years.
So Kyle, just thinking about guests over the last couple years, I feel like that we've talked to week in and week out, and I would guess you would be in this camp, but if somebody said, what's the biggest risk to the market? It would be interest rates, right? Like when we're in the low interest rate environment, interest rates spiking. I think the rise in interest rate that we've seen over the last 6 months has taken everybody, caught everybody off guard. Everybody's surprised. So we're kind of in that moment just with how fast it's moved. We're in that moment where I think if we were talking to somebody a year ago and said biggest risk to the market would be a spike in interest rates, we're there. What in your mind right now is the moving forward is the biggest risk? Is it just that interest rates keep increasing? There's been a lot of talk about variable rates leading to triggering higher costs. Like, can you just outline some of the biggest risks to the market?
Yeah, I would say it is probably interest rates. If they continue to increase at a high rate, then that is definitely a concern and a consideration. I don't think that we're going to see interest rates increase substantially more than they have already. I think that after these increases, I think that that the Bank of Canada is getting close to running its course. Mm-hmm. But of course, I would say that inflation is one of the biggest considerations here, definitely. But it's interesting to think about this too. Inflation affects all hard assets, and real estate is a hard asset. And so realistically, if it costs more to build a property, then what will end up happening is, and this is the problem that developers are having right now, is the market is starting to soften on the demand side. It's not getting any cheaper to build the product. It's getting more expensive to build the product. And so if you see developers step back and say, you know what, now is just not the right time. I'm getting squeezed on both ends. Lower demand means I have to have more aggressive pricing. But on the same side, it's not costing me too much money to build. I don't see that the supply trend changing. And realistically, yes, we're talking a lot about interest rates affecting the demand side, but we're not really talking about, like, I don't really see any circumstance where the supply side changes. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because the typical seller sentiment in Vancouver is that if somebody's putting their property on the market to list, if they don't get their price, then they're just not going to sell. You're not seeing a ton of people saying, oh my gosh, I have to sell right now because this is the absolute peak of the real estate market and the bubble is going to burst and I just throw my property in the market. And I don't see that. I don't see realtors saying that they're getting a lot of those calls. We're not seeing the data support that. So we don't see a massive uptick in supply on the seller sentiment. Your typical homeowner in Vancouver saying, I need to sell now because this is the peak, where you might find that in other markets in Canada and in particular in the US, I think it's more common down there. And the other side of it is that for builders, it's even harder for them to justify building in this particular climate right now if they can't sell out of their product. So I think the problem is we're actually going to still have a demand problem, and it won't be solved by very many things. It's very hard to actually solve the supply issue here in Greater Vancouver. And so that risk of the supply increasing substantially is not really on the table. And I think, yes, you can continue to decrease the demand side, but there's such little room for the supply side to decrease further that even if demand continues to increase due to interest rates, I don't think they're going to see massive decreases to values in the Lower Mainland in particular.
You know, it's funny. We had Bo Jarvis on the show recently, president of West Group, and he was saying that downtown specifically, and this is kind of in support of your comment about focusing on downtown as a good investment, but saying that a lot of the buildings downtown, a huge percentage of them are currently priced below replacement cost, which is pretty incredible to think about. Would you buy pre-sale right now?
You know, I'm usually not very keen on pre-sales. And for one of the first times in my investing career, I'm actually very interested and very keen on pre-sales. I'm starting to sniff around a little bit. And what you'll find is that some developers are offering some incentives on pre-sales. I shared something really interesting the other day. There's a developer in the Valley that's offering the ability to do a pre-sale with zero deposit. And what they're doing is they're blanketing some security over another property that you own. So they're saying, hey, we do have a 20% deposit, but you don't physically need to give us actual cash. We'll just secure a registered charge against another property that you own. So we have a claim in equity somewhere. You don't actually have to physically give us the cash. And so I think developers are going to get a little bit more creative here in an effort to be able to sell their product. But I'm very interested in, you know, doing a pre-sale where a property might not complete for a couple of years, because I actually see that the supply side will not increase substantially, where demand, especially for downtown condos, may be fairly solid. I'd love to be closing on a condo in anywhere from 2 to 4 years, because I'm very sure that the values will be higher in a 2 to 4 year period, especially if I can negotiate a really good arrangement with regards to the deposit. If I can get a 10% deposit, for instance, on two downtown condos, I'd be very keen on that.
Interesting. So in terms of strategy right now, Kyle, I'm just wondering, for people out there, you know, let's say that own real estate and are potentially looking to acquire more, it sounds like you're not necessarily playing defense. It looks like you're looking for opportunities. Can you maybe, if you had to offer one piece of advice for this moment, are you paying down debt? Are you out just searching for pre-sales in specific locations, like we just talked about downtown, for instance? What's one piece of advice for people out there listening?
What I'll say is that, and this is what a lot of our investors are doing right now, is they're just getting prepared to be able to take action if and when the opportunity arises. Our messaging is very consistent. There's no need to rush into a deal if it's not a deal, right? Don't go and buy the first thing that you see, because I don't think there's a need to do that. But I do think there is a good plan in place to get prepared to perhaps take action, because if you look at things and you say, okay, where's my down payment going to come from? Maybe you need to set up a home equity line of credit against your residence, because the values are probably never going to be, or not never, but won't be higher than this for at least the short term, especially if you're trying to restructure something against a detached home. Well, maybe getting your capital readily available, getting pre-qualified, knowing what you can take action on, what you can't, having your documents organized in advance may allow you to take advantage of opportunities that come up, because sometimes an opportunity comes up where it's very time sensitive. And if you already know exactly what you can qualify for, you can write an offer, get your financing approved in just a couple of days, move quick on the deal, close within 3 weeks or 4 weeks, something like that, where another competitor may not be able to offer that type of offer and put that on the table. I just think that being prepared, making sure you have your down payment and everything organized, and then when an opportunity arises, just being able to pounce, because there will be opportunities in this type of market for sure. And a lot of our smart investors are just getting prepared to be able to take action and be able to pull the trigger if the right deal comes along. But I also feel like if it's not a really good deal, there's no reason to jump the gun, you know, just be prepared and be ready to jump if something does pop up.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Kyle. Fantastic advice as always. We do have this segment called the Five Wire Five Lighthearted Questions to end the show. Can you stick around for that?
Of course.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate. Hey, that sounds familiar. Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Okay, so this time we're changing it up a bit because I think
we know your dance, we know your music choices.
Yeah, exactly. We had to change it up. So question number one, what is your favorite area in Vancouver?
Oh, geez. It's funny you asked this question. So my fiance and I, we bought a place in North Vancouver, love North Vancouver. However, we're also members at Jericho Tennis Club. And in the summer, Kits is just wonderful. Kitsilano is a beautiful area. We love it. And so we're starting to think about like, where's the next move for us? We love North Vancouver because we have two dogs and we love to take our dogs out for walks, and hiking trails are everywhere. But on the flip side too, Kitsilano is a beautiful area to be in the summer, but I say it's not as great in the winter in general. It's not as bumping. But those are probably the two areas that we're kind of zeroing in on that we really, really like, which is either Kitsilano or North Vancouver for different reasons. It's tough when especially the weather wasn't very good for a long period of time. We'd be at Jericho Tennis Club playing tennis, having dinner, looking over, and it'd be sunny there. We'd look over North Vancouver and sure enough, cloudy, rainy. So, you know, it's like, Kitsilano is great in the summer. And it's just, there's a little less to do though in the winter. It's not like you can just walk 5 or 10 minutes and be on a hiking trail like you can in North Vancouver. So that it's kind of split between those two.
Two blue chip areas. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I have some questions about your tennis game, but maybe I'll save those for once we're off. Favorite bar or restaurant?
Okay. I went to Elise the other day for a great steak. I really like that place. I think they do a really great job. The steak's wonderful. Appetizers are great. I think it's, if you haven't been there and you really are a steak lover, then I think you should definitely check it out.
That's a great one. Downtown penthouse or West Side Mansion?
Wow. Probably West Side Mansion, I think. Really like downtown and downtown penthouse was really nice. But I think for entertaining, I think I'd rather have the West penthouse. I'd rather have a backyard and a patio party.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. First place you bring someone from out of town. If it was me, it would be Jericho Tennis Club.
You also did a bit of a Bora.
Yeah. It's actually been one of our spots that we do take our friends to. So, We are a 5-minute drive from the Capilano Suspension Bridge, and then we are members at Jericho Tennis Club. So again, that North Van versus Kitsilano thing is kind of a tug and pull. If it's summertime, I think we're taking them to Jericho, and if it's the shoulder season or winter, then I think we're probably taking them to Capilano Suspension Bridge.
You know, I just want to point this out because it just occurred to me, I've said for years that people buy real estate based on the desire to entertain. And you, that was your reason for the West Side Mansion, was I'd rather entertain on a West Side Mansion. You're always thinking about having people over. That's a telltale sign. That's great. Kyle, last question, a book recommendation for our listeners. I think we've asked you that before, but we know that you're an avid reader. So do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, I've read a lot of really good books lately. I'm just trying to think of one that would be the most applicable here. What was the book that I really enjoyed? I mean, one that I keep coming back to, and I actually had my entire team read with me, was The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holmes. I found that if you're building a business and building a sales team in particular, I found that was a really effective book. It talked a lot about business to consumer marketing, but also business to business marketing. And I read that book probably 10 or 15 years ago. And there were certain moments that would pop into my head over and over again, little phrases or strategies or whatever. And then after I reread the book, I'm like, holy cow, there's a lot of things that came from that specific book. And so I may have already mentioned this book on a previous one, but I'm going to bring that one up again because I think it's really good for anybody that's building a sales team.
That's fantastic. Well, Kyle, how can people find out more about what you're up to and, of course, about the Green Mortgage Team?
Yeah, you can visit our website at www.greenmortgageteam.ca, phone 604-229-5515. I also own Origin Home Financing Partners, which is a company where we support mortgage brokers to build their businesses. So if you're interested in becoming a mortgage broker, or you are a mortgage broker and you wanted to learn more about what value you were bringing to mortgage brokers or their underwriting center and courses, then you can check us out there. And last but not least, we're finalizing a real estate investor 2-day course in September, in September 24th and 25th for my real estate investor, my real estate consulting company called Greenwealth. We're gonna have top level accountants and lawyers coming out to that event to be speakers at the event. And the intention here is that over the 2-day course, you're gonna actually be able to create a clear and concise game plan for yourself. So you'll be able to leave the event and know exactly what step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera, is to build out your real estate portfolio and just give you more clarity. Cause we found that a lot of the investment groups provide a lot of information, but it's not as one-on-one or personal. It doesn't help people really get clarity on building their own game plan. And so if you want to learn more about that, then you can email us at info@greenwealthcapital.ca.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much again for your time, Kyle. It's always great to have you on the show. And yeah, we're in a unique moment, so it's good to get your take.
Absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be an interesting next couple of months, but we're ready.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Kyle. Take care. So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Kyle Green, owner of Green Mortgage Teams. And as he details at the end of that conversation, an assortment of other business ventures right now. Nobody's going to say Kyle Green's not a hustler.
Yeah, no kidding. Eh? It's like, we haven't talked to you for 3 weeks. Oh, I started 3 new companies.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's a busy guy for sure. And definitely has his finger on the pulse. A lot of people, especially if you've been in real estate investing, really a common thread is, man, I wish I got into this when I was younger, right? Like, is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's always the way.
Kyle's
like the only guy. Yeah.
He couldn't have been younger.
He's like, and then I got called on stage. I was 12.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What? How did this even, what a
very fortunate position to
fortunate
be in.
Fortunate position, but also wisdom beyond his years. Let's put it that way, because you know, there's a lot of people that would flounder in that situation.
And not a lot of people get to debate between North Van and Kitts, but
yeah, no kidding.
He's in a good spot, that Kyle Green.
He's in a good spot, that's for sure. What else do we have before we cut for the week, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live, including the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast, in which it sounds like you and Corey spoke to the mayor of Parksville.
Mayor of Parksville.
The political heavyweights continue on the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast.
That's a great episode, by the way, you know, as demonstrated by an email from our dad. He was like, that was good. That was a good show.
Yeah.
He only comments on the ones where he really likes him. And that was one that got a JBO thumbs up.
The mayor of Parksville got his attention, that's for sure. Anyway, back to our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We have all the synopses of the episodes. We have the live wire. This is our weekly mailer with stats before anyone else, different types of stats, episode guides, deal of the month, pre-sales, residential and commercial. There's no reason why you don't want to be on the live wire. We also have tried and true private client services.
Because Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free at your fingertips. It's available at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. As we've said time and time again on this show, in markets like this, there's no better resource than private client services because you get to see the sold prices in real time as the market is changing. So when something sells, did they get asking for
it? Well, you know what?
Did it sell for 10% below? This is the time.
This is a time, and real estate is local, as everyone knows, and aggregate stats are very useful. But you know what? If you're monitoring submarkets, some are doing Fairview, I'm looking at you, remarkably well.
Yeah, there was that one that had like, something like 70 people through on the weekend and 5 pre-inspections still. I called on a place in North Burnaby that had an accepted offer, like, you know, within a day, that was like not really like it was like a pretty much a fair market value price point from 3 months ago. So
the point is
that there's stuff still moving. You want to know where the opportunities are. You want to know the markets that are holding firm. It's just a time to be monitoring.
Absolutely. And if you want to talk about that or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also got that Kokomo line info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yeah, and come back next week for another great episode. We've got some really great shows coming up. Super exciting.
Yeah.
Can't wait. It's going to be a hot summer here at Kokomo Studios.
All right, have a good week. Stay cool.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.